This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
We're talking today on Keeping the Faith with Jessica Culp from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Welcome, Jessica.
Thank you very much.
So what does a food bank do?
The food bank acquires, stores, and distributes food to nonprofit food program organizations such as soup kitchens, pantries, shelters.
Homeless shelters.
Homeless
sure.
shelters, mm-hmm. Not-for-profit youth snack programs.
Religious organizations that distribute food to the needy?
Yes, most of the time those are organized as food pantries or they distribute emergency food boxes.
And it has to, regardless of which religious organization does it, they have to be willing to give it to everybody, anybody who asks, right?
For That's the food correct. Bank. Uh-huh. That's correct.
Okay. And how long has the Eastern Illinois Food Bank been around?
Actually, the food bank opened around 1984 in Eastern Illinois. It came from the Central Illinois Food Bank, which opened in 1982.
Where was that one located? Was that Springfield?
Actually, that's in Springfield, Illinois, uh-huh. and that is still there.
Right. My memory is a little faulty, but I remember being on a car ride with some other pastors going to Springfield to see the Central Illinois Food Bank, which mm-hmm. had just opened when we were considering having one here. And I can't remember the pastor's name mm-hmm. who kind of took the lead in it, but who'd called us all together. But he was the pastor at St. Peter's United Church of Christ in Champaign at that time. I can't recall his name, but he was really the instigator, I know, when it got started here and called a group of people together. And then some of us took that trip to Springfield and said, yeah, what a great idea. Let's have one over here.
Yeah, and the people that I know more about is Bill and Karen Mermelstein, who actually own International Galleries here in town, and Vern Fine, who is still active uh-huh. with the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. He is a teacher at Cunningham Children's Home, and he's the director of Mercy Works at Vineyard Church in Urbana.
I think Vern was on that car trip back in, I suppose, 82 or 83. Where does the food come from?
Well, it comes from all across the country, and it can come locally as well. We work with America's Second Harvest, which is like
Second Harvest.
America's Second Harvest. Yes, they're the nation's food bank network, and what they do is they contract with the corporate food donors such as Kraft, Quaker, from all across the country. And then they find out, you know, when something's been overstocked, you know, there's been bad packaging, simple things that don't do anything to the food. And then they work with us in order to get that food to the appropriate food banks.
And I remember I was just amazed at the quantity of food that before this was just sort of thrown away because big companies that were processing it might make a little mistake on a label mm-hmm. and it would have 6 ounces and it was really giving 8. But because it was wrong, the Food and Drug, I guess, laws are so strict that they would have to take it all apart and repackage it, and the machines aren't made to do that. And so it was cheaper for them just to throw good food away.
Yeah, it's huge. And then on the America's Second Harvest website, which is www.americassecondharvest.org, they have a counter, a food waste counter, that is just, I mean, it just kind of puts it into perspective how much food is being thrown away.
Hmm. I know a food bank never knows exactly what food's going to be there, right? It all depends on who gives them food.
That's right. That's right. It's sometimes very hard for our food pantries to count on a certain type of food being there. And that's just part of, you know, that's part of what we do. We provide what we can.
And so how do corporations benefit from this? Because you don't go out and collect the food. You ask the people who are donating it to deliver it to you, right? To a central warehouse?
That's right. That's right. Well, there's a tax write-off for them okay. as well, so they do benefit.
Okay. So the value of the food they can take as a tax write-off. Mm-hmm. So it benefits a corporation. They have an incentive to do it. And where does the money come from, though, to pay for your warehouse and to pay for your salary and the other people who work at the food bank?
Well, actually, there is. I can tell you that. 60% of our funds come from shared member maintenance fees. That is basically the cost of acquiring the food, keeping the food, and distributing the food. It is a very low cost. If people go onto our website at eifoodbank.org, they can pull up a shopping list and kind of get a feel for that. It's whatever the food program, when they come to buy from us, they're getting the food at 1/10 of the price of what it would normally be. So it's a really great deal for us. 16% comes from contract and public support. 14% comes from private gift support. 5% comes from corporate agency gift support. And 3% comes from corporate foundation grant support. And 2% from community gifts.
And so places like the United Way, I know, contribute to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about you. How did you end up at the Eastern Illinois Food Bank? What's your position there?
Well, I'm the Director of Development at Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and I've been with the food bank for about 6 months. Before then, I went to Parkland College, got my associate's degree there, graduated in 2000. Got my bachelor's degree in communications from the U of I at Springfield and had a fellowship at the U of I Foundation this last summer. It's called the Rice Fundraising Fellowship, and that was a wonderful experience that really provided me the opportunity to see how fundraising is done on an ethical – well, they just do a fantastic job at the U of I Foundation.
So you learned how to do fundraising for our nonprofit groups. Why did you want to do that?
Well, I actually have always wanted to help people, and I wasn't sure how I was going to do it. And I wanted to go into broadcast journalism. And I found out that maybe that just wasn't the thing for me. Then I thought about public relations. And so I worked in marketing and communications for a little bit, part-time. And from that, I actually met with someone at the United Way of Champaign County here years ago. And I thought, wow, that's a great idea. You know, I feel like, you know, I have a lot of enthusiasm and energy. And to put it into, you know, helping people, that's what I wanted to do. So what I did at the U of I at Springfield was I did an internship with the Boys and Girls Club over there and worked with the director of development, saw how she was doing her fundraising, how the organization was run, and that's pretty much how I got the want to do fundraising for a nonprofit organization.
Hmm.
And what a better place to do something like that for a basic needs, you know, feeding the hungry.
I can remember when I was one of the pastors at McKinley Presbyterian Church in Champaign-Urbana, and we had a homeless shelter in the basement of the church. It was first called the Emergency Men's Shelter, and then it was a winter shelter, and then it became the Men's Emergency Shelter. And now it has a much better location after, I think, 17 years at the church basement. Then a wonderful building was people raised money
mm-hmm.
for, and now it's called the Times Center. But I know one of our problems was trying to offer a free meal in mm-hmm. the evening for men. It first started for 15 men, and then 25, and then 50, and then 75. And where does all this food come from in many churches and synagogues and mosques? Locally, congregations, people would bring frozen soup and stew and chili and things like that. But that's one reason we were just delighted when the food bank actually got started, because we'd get a variety of things. It would be very inexpensive, and it was often easier to raise money to pay the food bank that little 10% of what
right,
it would cost
right.
for the food. Rather than try to beg people to make food and bring it over each night.
Well, and Steve, I've heard that a lot. As the director of development, I not only do the fundraising, but I go out and work with agencies as well. I'm the main agency relations person, and the food bank is an invaluable resource. I have talked to so many program directors of soup kitchens, pantries that say, we don't know what we'd do without the food bank. We have to have that food, and with it, you know, we couldn't afford to go to the grocery store and buy that food. Mm-hmm. So when you had the men's emergency shelter, was there another homeless shelter, or was
that was the first in Champaign-Urbana, and then the a woman's shelter was started a few years later, which became it's now known as the Center for Women in Transition. Mm-hmm. The only one that was in existence before that was the Salvation Army had a shelter. But they had very strict rules about who could be there. They wouldn't take people who'd been drinking, for example.
Oh, okay.
Which leaves out about a third of the people who are homeless.
Mm-hmm.
The Salvation Army is a very evangelical religious organization and tries to persuade people to become their variety of Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed it was needed to have another type that would be open to anybody, where there wouldn't be any of that kind of haranguing people about their particular religious faith.
Mm-hmm.
So it met a real need, but the food bank was an important part of helping that survive.
That's really neat how you say, that you wanted to have a shelter for that different purpose. And that's the thing. We have about 180 programs in our 14-county area, and it's amazing how each of them serves a niche. Mm. You know, there are so many different types of people that are at risk for hunger, that are hungry, that just a blanket type of food pantry, soup kitchen, that's not realistic. It's not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just interesting how there are food pantries here and there, and how they work with their own communities, and they have that niche.
Are they pretty much all over the United States now?
Food banks are across the nation and cover all the states.
Mm-hmm.
So that they're completely covered. We have
how many in the state of Illinois?
There are 9 in the state of Illinois, and they're of all different sizes, too. Like, for example, there's the Greater Chicago Food Depository that just works with Cook County.
Uh-huh.
And then,
of course, that's 9 million people.
Right, right. They have a big job up there. So the rest of them are more similar to us, and we have 14, but it varies.
Now, your warehouse is in Urbana, right?
Yes, it is. It's uh-huh. right. It's on North Shore Drive, which is right north of the Lincoln exit on I-74.
And for someone who's never seen it, describe to our listeners what it looks like. How does it work?
Well, it is a huge warehouse, and what happens is that you walk through the front into the warehouse, and on your left-hand side, you've got the loading docks, which is where our member agencies back up in order to get their supplies.
Now, these are usually relatively small vehicles.
Yes, yes.
Like vans and maybe even cars.
Yeah,
or
vans,
pickup
cars, trucks,
or,
that's uh-huh. right. They come in all different types. And we have warehouse staff. We have a very small staff at the food bank. We only have 10 people that work there. Four of them are in the warehouse, and they are constantly picking and pulling orders up to the loading dock in the order that they're in the time that they're scheduled to arrive. They don't have to check in. I mean, they have to check in, but they don't have to have a scheduled appointment. But most of them do.
Okay.
Considering that not all of them are local.
All right. So here's this loading dock where the people who want the food come. How does the food get into the warehouse? Same loading dock?
Nope. It's on actually the food comes in around the other side of the building.
And that's with big semi-trailer trucks off.
That's right.
Right.
That's right.
And so they get unloaded on the other side of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And there are forklifts and things like that to unload, right?
Well, actually, up until this last week, we only had one forklift.
One. Okay.
And it was incredible. We had 5 people actually at the food bank that had the certificate to drive a forklift, and we were lucky to receive a grant from the Community Foundation of East Central Illinois that helped us fund to get another used forklift, which was just tremendous for us. We're very happy. So,
and those kind of pieces of equipment are not cheap.
Well, they're not. And that's why we were so grateful in order to get it. And it just, I mean, we had this one forklift that was doing the job of at least two. And every day, you know, we had to plug it in right at 3:30 so it could get charged back up for the next day. Uh-huh. So.
All right. So you've got loading docks on both sides of the building. And how's all this food organized that comes off these trucks?
Well, they each have a location. The warehouse staff, they're pretty much in charge of that. I haven't quite figured that out, to be honest with you.
I've walked through it, and it's quite a thing to see, because here's food just packed to the ceiling on all kinds what do they call those, pallets?
Pallets, yes. Uh-huh. Yes, and it's not just, it's not just boxes. We have Gaylords, which are these gigantic boxes. And when we get those gigantic boxes and we get things that are just donated to us that are random, they come, like for our Food for Families drive, we have food drives where people just throw in all the different food. We have to repackage that we have to sort it in what we call our clean room, which is our sorting room, and that is new this year. We have volunteers come in. We work with the Developmental Services Center. They come in and they help us do that. That's a pretty huge part of our operation there.
Now, the other thing that I remember seeing when I took a tour through the warehouse, there is an office area.
Yes, there is.
And that's where your office is, where the director's office is, and secretarial staff.
That's right.
Accountants, I suppose. I don't know. Business people.
We have four or five people that are up front right now. And then there are actually two offices that are in the warehouse. One is our one is a lady whose name is Beth. She does our buying. You know, she finds out what are the awesome deals, where are the what can be donated, what can we get. And then there's our warehouse manager, and she's out actually in the warehouse. So
you've talked to us about paid staff. I want to ask about volunteers, but before I do that, let me encourage listeners to give us a call. Keeping the Faith is a live program on Sundays here on AM 580 WILL. And from 5 to 6, we interview people dealing with issues of ethics and values and spirituality and religion. And today we're talking with Jessica Culp from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank that supports many food for many different projects in this area. If you'd like to ask a question or make a comment, anywhere the program is heard, you may dial toll-free if it's a long-distance call to Champaign-Urbana, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. In Champaign-Urbana, you can access several local lines by punching in 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, please call 333-WILL if you have a question for our guest, Jessica Culp. And I see we have a caller waiting already on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Hi. Yes, I do have a question and also a comment. I'm very grateful for the services of Food Bank, and you mentioned that people were at risk, and I want to hear more about that. But my question is, you've described how the situation works in the forklift and how things are stored, but can you describe for me how does it do work through the churches? How do you have a tour of the place? I'll just listen to the answer.
And what is your name?
My name is Jan Jefferson.
Jan, actually, you can call anytime, 328-3663. Which is Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and you can come out anytime, Monday through Friday. I'm there from 9 to 5, and I would be glad to give you a tour.
Could you repeat the phone number one more time, Jessica?
It's 328-3663.
Thank you.
Well, no problem. Thank you for calling.
And for folks listening farther away, that's area code 217, and then 328-3663. And previously, Jessica had given the website for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. That's at eifoodbank.org. EI for Eastern Illinois Food Bank .org for more information about how to visit or how to learn more about it. And if you have a nonprofit organization that would qualify to receive food from the food bank, that's where you could find out about it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think one thing that surprises some people who come in for a tour is that we don't just have food. We take basically anything that is donated to us. We have a lot of health and beauty products. Mm-hmm. Paper products are a huge need. As many people know, we are not people can't use their link card to buy toilet paper. Mm-hmm. So if you're thinking about donating something, toilet paper is a wonderful thing. We actually have cat food and dog food. We work with some local animal rescue organizations in the 14-county area. We don't always have cat food or dog food, but when we do, we can work with someone to get that out. And homeless shelters also sometimes use that as well.
I know the shelter, when it was at McKinley Church, we often needed toiletries. We needed soap. We needed razors. Absolutely. We needed razor blades, and things like that were very helpful. Shaving lotion.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit about what a typical day is like. How many agencies from all these counties are coming to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank? They send trucks, they send cars, they send vans. How busy are you?
Well, it varies. Monday is usually one of our busier days. We deal with USDA commodity agencies. We work with the state of Illinois, and those are, of course, free of charge to the qualifying agencies. So when those come in, we're usually busier than at other times. So it varies. It really does.
But with a staff of 10, you must be filling a lot of trucks and unloading a lot of trucks.
We really are. We have a really small but dedicated staff. Like I said, you know, I do the fundraising, but I'm also agency relations, and I'm going out there and I'm monitoring, and I'm going to all of our agencies and taking a look and seeing what they're doing and how they're reaching out to people.
And the first caller earlier asked about the people at risk. Who are some of those folks that these agencies serve by providing them this kind of food and other supplies?
Well, I think it's, excuse me.
We've already mentioned the homeless shelters, so we know about people who are at the absolute bottom probably have the most need. What other sorts of agencies do you help?
Well, we've got food pantries where people can come in on an as-needed basis, and they're usually set up. You know, they can be open for 1 to 2 hours, 1 to 5 days a week. We've got the Vineyard Food Pantry in Urbana that's open on Wednesdays from 10 to 12 in the morning, and that's in a walk-in basis. And then we've got St. Vincent de Paul in Urbana, where they have a food pantry Monday through Friday from 4:30 to 5. And I was just actually out there talking to Sophia Ziegler, who runs that food pantry, last week. And she was telling me that she's seeing more and more young people, not just necessarily ones with children either, individuals.
Mm-hmm. And the St. Vincent de Paul Society would be supported by all the Catholic churches in this area.
Well, that is part of St. Pat's Church in Urbana, and then there's also St. Vincent de Paul in Champaign.
All right. At Holy Cross or St. Matthew's?
Yes.
Okay.
Holy Cross.
Holy Cross. What are some of the other agencies?
Well, let's see. We've got Greater Holy Temple that is in downtown Champaign, and they really struggle. They're a smaller pantry, and they're in a much-needed area. They're behind Provena Covenant. Mm-hmm. We know that that is just a neighborhood at risk, and they're really struggling to make it, trying to work with their ministerial alliances in order to get funds.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the homeless shelters. I talked to the Danville Rescue Mission in Danville, obviously, and that's kind of where I found out or just realize that there really aren't a lot of shelters for families.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got Restoration Urban Ministries in Champaign, who they actually do house some families there. So there are so many faces on hunger. Mm. So
we're talking with Jessica Culp from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and listeners who'd like to learn more about that may check out their website at eifoodbank.org or give them a call at 217-328-3663 during the week. We have another caller waiting on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Yes, go ahead.
Hi. Thank you very much for, again, having a socially conscious topic. I have been a social worker for 15 years now, and it is just amazing, I think, how many organizations the Eastern Illinois Food Bank touches. I mean, even if you said the numbers of the agencies and the people served, I think it's hard to discuss the impact of the single provider. It's just amazing. And I have a point and then a question I'd like to ask. First off, I think any listeners out there need to be aware that EIF and all charities and people working with the homeless desperately need your help. If you want to give directly to a shelter, please do so, because they're all dependent upon EIF. When I worked in a local domestic violence shelter, I have to say almost all the protein that the residents got came from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and maybe people aren't thrilled by eating chicken every night. But it is just a crucial source of support for all the social service agencies in town. I mean, it's just, and in the county and all the counties around. So I want to encourage people to help EIF or help your local shelter. The other thing I'm curious about is what's happening with the Department of Agriculture and the commodities? Because it seemed that, you know, for a while, there were commodities coming through, but under recent administrations, there seems to be less and less of the commodity goods, and they are such an important part of the structure. And so I'm just curious about what kind of support you're getting from commodities, but where you're going outside of commodities to provide such wonderful service. And thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for the testimonial. And what about the question, Jessica? Is that something you happen to know about?
Well, actually, I must say that I am not the expert on that. I do know that we have been receiving less commodities, and the commodities that we have been receiving haven't been, as
helpful
as other times. We can't count on them. What we are doing, but I would also encourage you, if you do want to know more about that, please feel free to call me during the week, and I would be glad to actually find out more about that information for you. What we are doing is we have something called the Revolving Food Fund, and what we do is we take some money that we have, and we go and we find deals across the nation on turkey, for example. We got a great deal on ground turkey, and that's just not all we get. We get different things in order to balance what we have. Mm-hmm. Like we were talking about earlier, we can't count on what we have. It varies so. What we try to do is balance that by buying things, and then our agencies can get them from us at a rate that's comparable to, let's say, the Aldi stores.
Mm.
No matter what, most of the time our agencies will have to leave the food bank and go somewhere else to finish their shopping. But it does help them do more one-stop shopping with us.
We'll be getting back to our guest, Jessica Culp from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, in just a moment. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. And let me let the listeners know who some of our guests will be in upcoming programs. Next week, Larry Greenfield from the Protestants for the Common Good out of Chicago will be our guest, and he'll be talking about abortion rights. That'll be February 6th here on Keeping the Faith, and we'll have a guest host that day. Don Nolan from Parkland College will be our guest host. I'll be out of the state for a little bit. On February 13, we'll be playing an archive program. This will be a bit of an unusual program for us. This will be a program in memory of Bruce Heck. Reverend Heck died just last week, a Lutheran pastor and also an actor. And we were fortunate back in the year 2000 to interview with Bruce Heck about that combination of being a Lutheran pastor and an actor in theater. And it was a fascinating interview, and we're going to replay that in memory of Bruce Heck on February 13 here on Keeping the Faith. The memorial service for Bruce was last Wednesday in Rankin, Illinois. Then on February 20, our guest will be Marla Shoemaker, who is a social worker dealing with the elderly. So we'll talk about some of the services available for the elderly and certain kind of programs on February 20. On February 27, we have a fascinating program coming up. We'll be talking with a New Testament professor from Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago, Barbara Rossings. She'll be giving us a talk here at Krannert Art Museum at 2 o'clock that afternoon, February 27, dealing with the whole theme of the apocalypse. And Krannert Art Museum at the on the campus of the U of I will be started just last weekend with an exhibition on that theme. And so the people who would like to see that exhibition may go to Krannert Tuesdays through Sundays, Krannert Art Museum, and see that. And then on the 27th, we'll hear Barbara Rossing. You can hear her either live at the Art Museum at 2, or if you can't make that, listen on the radio at 5, and she'll be here in the studio talking about the whole theme of apocalypse in art. Support for Keeping the Faith is provided partially by the University YMCA at the University of Illinois, where I am the executive director. The Y is the oldest religious institution at the university. It was started by students just 6 years after the university began. So for the last 132 years, the Y has been helping develop student leaders by providing opportunities for social action and community service. The Y on this campus is like 23 other collegiate Ys around this country and like 42 other collegiate Ys around the world, that we don't have a gym or a pool, but we provide these opportunities for service for students and try to develop early on in a young person's life an appreciation for helping other people. So the Y survives partially by support from friends. People who would like to donate a vehicle, for example, can give it to the University Y. Just give me a call, Steve Shoemaker. We take cars or motorcycles or pickup trucks, and people get a tax write-off for the value that we sell that vehicle at. And we often sell them to students and other people in the community who appreciate a decent used car. So it helps the Y, and it helps someone get a vehicle that might not ordinarily be able to, and people can take a tax write-off for making a donation of a vehicle to the University YMCA. Coming up this week on other programs on WILL that are people who appreciate Keeping the Faith might want to listen for, on Monday at 11, David Inge on Focus 580 will be talking with Francis Robinson about otherworldly and thisworldly piety and the Islamic revival. That's Francis Robinson at 11 this Monday. And later on Focus 580, on Thursday at 11, dealing with the conversation we're having today about the food bank, there's going to be Catherine Bertini, who's Undersecretary General for Management of the United Nations, will be in the studio here talking about progress toward global food security. That's Thursday at 11, Catherine Bertini. She's a Millercom speaker who will be on campus that day. So those are a couple programs coming up this week that listeners to Keeping the Faith might appreciate. Another program at the Y this Tuesday, Noyer University at noon, Dean Robert Easter, who's Dean of the College of Agriculture, will be giving a lecture. That's February 1st, this Tuesday at noon at the Y, a free lecture, talking about bio-based foods, fuel production, all those kind of things that the College of Agriculture is dealing with these days. And this Friday, February 4th at University Y, Garrett Duncan from Washington University in St. Louis will be talking about urban schools and the problem that schools in urban areas are often helping create an entire class of individuals at risk, and how those schools are trying to respond to those problems. The last program I'll mention about, provided by University YMCA, that's starting up this semester is our Communiversity class. Miss V teaching ballroom dance, various people teaching yoga and Tai Bo and Alexander technique. Glenn Hymanover teaching different massage classes, how you can learn how to give a massage to your friends. Various martial arts, language classes, all these are available at the Y at practically free. If you're curious about them, stop by the Y and pick up a catalog. They're also available at the libraries and other places around town. Or you can check online at universityymca.org and then clicking on university. Communiversity, C-O-M-M-U-N-I-V-E-R-S-I-T-Y, Communiversity. Well, let's get back to our guest, Jessica Culp, and I see we have a caller who's been very patient waiting to talk with our guest today. Let's go back to line one. Yes.
Yes, hi. Me again. I do have one. I'm a retired RN. I do have one question. How does the food bank work together with, this is on Keeping the Faith, hospice, Empty Tomb, Cancer Society, churches, Cranard? That's my question.
So how do you hook up with these various agencies? Do they come to you? Do you have a process where you have to make sure they're legitimate before you start supplying them with this inexpensive food?
Yes, there is an application process. First of all, you have to be a 501c3 nonprofit organization or exempt through church status, serving the ill, needy, or children. Let's see. What are the organizations that you mentioned again?
She mentioned hospice. Mentioned... I'm already forgetting.
Said Empty Tomb.
Oh, Empty Tomb.
Okay,
sure.
Empty Tomb. We don't work with Empty Tomb directly, but a lot of our emergency food programs do. Like, for example, the First Methodist Church in Champaign. They have an emergency food program. Well, they actually don't have people come to them directly. People go to the Empty Tomb, and then the Empty Tomb refers them to this church, and that's how they get their food. Mm-hmm. So that's how we work with them.
And there was a question earlier from a caller that I never got back to, and that was about volunteers. If somebody wants to volunteer to help the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, how would they do that?
Well, usually we have our volunteers come in groups, because usually there's a big repackaging that's going on, or repackaging of rice, for example. We had about 40 people come in on October the 23rd of last year for Make a Difference Day, and we did an assembly line. We don't have a lot of individual volunteers. The volunteer work is not glamorous. Mm-hmm. It's really not. A lot of people don't realize that, you know, they're looking for a warm, you know, volunteer experience, and some people want to work with giving the food out directly. Now, we at the food bank do not distribute food directly. We distribute the food to the agencies, and then the agencies distribute to the people.
Okay. So a person who wants to be on at that point in the food delivery chain would then volunteer for one of these agencies to maybe help distribute the food to folks.
Yes, and if they'd like to call us and find out who our agencies are and where we might want to, where they might like to be, we could give them several suggestions and contacts.
All right, and again, the phone number for Eastern Illinois Food Bank in Champaign-Urbana is 217-328-3663, or check out their website, eifoodbank.org. We're talking with Jessica Culp, and let me give the phone numbers if you'd like to make a call here with a comment or question about the food bank. 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free call. So if you would have to make a long-distance call to Champaign, use that number, and it's free for you, including listeners on the Internet. If you're listening to WILL at will.uiuc.edu, and have clicked on AM 580, If you're in the continental U.S., you may call us at 1-800-222-9455. In Champaign-Urbana, listeners may dial 333-WILL, 333-9455. So, a big group, it can be helpful at certain times at the food bank, and particularly if you need to know they're coming, because you have to organize a way that they can work safely around the heavy equipment like forklifts. But you talked about repackaging. Now, why is repackaging necessary? Some corporation has come up with all this extra Cheerios or Wheaties or whatever it is, and it was mislabeled or whatever. But it's still good. It's still fresh. They deliver it to you in huge packages. Mm-hmm. But to get it to agencies, you have to do something to it, right?
Right. We have to, because an agency isn't probably going to want such a large package. They're going to want to have it more in individual sizes. Mm-hmm. For example, if we get a Gaylord, which is a huge box full of apples, mm-hmm. we're going to want to break those down somehow and put them into bags so that our agencies can get, you know, so many bags and not the entire contents. So.
Sure. And ordinarily, your staff would do that, but there are times when volunteers could be helpful.
Well, we have a pretty small staff, like mm-hmm. I said before, and so definitely we need community groups to come in and help us out. And we've had a lot of support from the university. A lot of students come in, RSVP, the Rotary Club. So.
Okay. So there are several service groups who've helped you from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And if people want to just contribute, since you're the director of development and trying to raise money for the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, what kind of gifts are helpful?
Well, usually cash contributions are the best. And a lot of times people want to give food, and that is great. We have a lot of local people that grow food, and they want to bring it in, and that's great. But we can take that food and buy $10. We can take every dollar and turn it into $10 worth of food mm-hmm. because of our purchasing power.
Mm-hmm. So people who have extra tomatoes in their garden, that's not going to help you very much.
Yeah, but we would still love to have that because
you take that. Okay.
we take that anyway. All of our produce there is not a shared maintenance fee on the produce. It goes free to any of our agencies any okay. of the time.
And how much zucchini did you get last summer?
We got a lot of tomatoes. I remember that.
Okay. We have another caller waiting on line one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest from Eastern Illinois Food Bank. Go ahead.
I have a question. You talked about repackaging. In addition to the gifts, donations of monies, do you have packaging needs in terms of, I know I have tons of extra plastic bags that you get at the grocery stores. What types of, or boxes, do you have those types of needs? And I'll hang up.
Well, thank you for asking. Actually, we are in need of banana boxes right now. That's how we usually repackage all of our food, is in banana boxes, and we've had a loss of donations for that product. And so we're in pretty desperate need for banana boxes, or any type of boxes for that matter would be a great help to the food bank.
You're talking about cardboard boxes?
Cardboard boxes. Yeah, that'd be great.
Huh. I wonder if some of the recycling centers that deal with cardboard might be happy to know about that.
Yeah, that'd be great.
All right. So you're recycling food. How do you keep it fresh and clean? How do you keep it away from mice and other things like that?
Well, of course, we have a regular pest control, and just to let the people know out there, the food bank must meet the same strict codes for handling and storing food products as a commercial grocery store or restaurant. So all products, including packaged, canned perishable, and non-perishable foods, must meet all the food and safety and nutrition standards.
I see. So you have the same standards a grocery store
would. Yes, we do. Huh? Yes, we do.
Okay. We have another caller waiting, again, on one of our local lines. And again, that's available at 333-9455, the toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. Let's go to line one. You're on Keeping the Faith.
Good afternoon. I was wondering if, let's say, a nonprofit or a church group would want to have a fundraiser, like a, let's say, for example, a meal, and where all the proceeds would go to the poor, to translate maybe raw food items into, you know, a meal. Would the food bank support that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, you had the noodles and like spaghetti, if the church had a spaghetti supper that where all the proceeds would go to the poor, you would go along with that?
Now, could you give me more detail about that?
Well, could the church get the food items that would be translated into a meal and, you know, like as a fundraiser, could they get their food items from the Eastern Illinois Food Bank?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It has to be like a part of the regular, like regular program that's going to go to ill, needy, or children. It has to be kind of a setup thing, not just a fundraiser.
Uh-huh. Even if the all the funds gathered would be specifically targeted for the poor.
Yes.
I see. Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
So you have certain regulations or limits as to where the food can go.
Yes. Well, just like I said, there's a process. There's a process of becoming an agency with us, and with the paperwork and everything, we're set up to help with nonprofit food programs.
So not just a one-time
event. Not just a one-time thing. It wouldn't necessarily be worth it considering the paperwork that they have to – I mean, the paperwork's not really – I mean, it's not – I'm not trying to say that it's really rigorous, but it's enough of a process to where it's not really, you know, formatted for a one-time thing.
Okay.
So.
All right. Now, let me talk a little bit with you just about why you got into this kind of an effort. What appealed to you about working for a nonprofit? Because the salaries aren't great.
Well, I tell you what, one thing that really affected me or brought me to the food bank, for one thing, is I was a recipient of emergency food programs myself on several occasions. I was a single mom several years ago, struggling to make ends meet, did not have enough money for groceries, and I heard of a place called, let's see. Well, I'm not exactly sure I remember what it was called, but it was out of a little town called La Place, Illinois.
Sure.
And
near Decatur.
And someone had told me in the neighborhood that I lived in that I should call and they would give me food. And, you know, I must say it's a humbling thing.
Sure.
I never thought that I would have to call and ask for food. I just never thought that. I never thought of myself in that way. And so I did call because the thing was I had spent my, you know, money on bills.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to use my credit card again at the grocery store.
Sure.
I was just struggling. So I ended up calling this lady, and she ended up leaving a box of food and other things, grocery products, on my door. And I remember feeling so relieved to not have to buy shampoo and
sure.
not have to buy toilet paper. And there were plenty of other things in there. Then there was another instance. Actually, after I graduated from college, I mentioned I graduated in December of 03.
Mm-hmm.
And I had one heck of a time trying to find a job. I had a bachelor's degree, but I was a single mom. You know, I was just trying to get by without a job. Tried to work some temporary jobs. Those fell through, and I ended up at the food pantry at the Vineyard in Urbana.
Mm.
And I really don't know what I would have done without them.
Mm.
So when I found out about a position opening up at Eastern Illinois Food Bank, it was more than just, you know, any other nonprofit to me.
It was personal.
It was personal.
Sure.
Yeah.
And how were you treated when you went to the food pantry at this local church?
Well, I have to be honest with you. I mean, I walked in and I'm just going to be honest. I didn't feel that I looked the part.
Uh-huh.
You know, I had nicer clothes.
You're a college
than some
graduate.
Of the,
yeah.
I mean, I what was I doing here, you know?
Yeah.
And I've always felt that I was not one of the people to feel like I was above someone, and then I felt, you know, so humbled by that experience.
Mm-hmm.
But they treated me very well.
Mm.
They treated me very well, and you know, when you go there, they offer prayer, but they don't say that you have to take it,
uh-huh.
you know, and it was just a great experience, actually, and I'm glad that they were there for me in that time.
Now, how do the agencies who give away food, to people in need or to someone who's ill? And what was the third one?
Needy, ill, or children.
Children. For a child, it's kind of obvious that, okay, they're a kid, but how do these agencies know if someone's really sick or if they're just pretending or if they're really needy or if they're just pretending and just don't want to pay for their groceries?
Well, I know that a lot of our agencies are actually worried about abuse of the system. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that, you know, yes, there is going to be abuse of the system. There's nothing we can do. As a matter of fact, I was talking to an agency not too long ago, and they said, well, you know, there's a lady that drives around town and gets, you know, her food from one pantry and then goes to the other. Mm-hmm. And I just have to reiterate that For the people that really do need it and don't take advantage of the system, that's the people that you have to look, you know, that you're doing that for. Mm-hmm. So,
but agencies keep records of who
they do
who
keep
come.
A file, but mm-hmm. depending on the type of agency they are, that depends on the identification that they. That they need. For example, if you are a USDA commodity food pantry, you're not allowed to take records on the people. Like, you're not allowed to look at their driver's license. You're not allowed to, no. If they say that there's 8 people in the family, they don't have to provide ID cards for all those people.
I see.
But, you know, that's because they're a state agency. Now, a food pantry that's not a state agency, they can require a little bit more identification, and that's their own prerogative.
Mm-hmm. But as you say, for someone to do that, they're standing in line, they're waiting, they're talking to a real human being, mm-hmm. and they'd have to be pretty blatant, I guess, or without conscience to take money or to take food that could be going to someone who really needed it if they didn't.
Yeah, I mean, I just think that the percentage is very small. Oh. There are a lot of people that need food out there, uh-huh. and I think that there is a huge stigma when it comes to hunger, and it's a shame, and we all have to kind of be aware of it and think about it because, for example, I know personally there were plenty of times that I was eligible that I just took a credit card and went to the grocery store, and that really hurt me. And
because then you had to pay the interest.
Right. I mean, there's a whole stigma there, and, mm-hmm. and people need to understand that that's what those programs are there for. So we had AmeriCorps workers go out last year and do surveys, and they asked a lot of the clients, well, they asked all the clients that would interview with them, were there times in your life where you could have received services and you didn't?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people said yes. And the subsequent question was why? And they said because other people needed it more.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
I know transportation is one of the problems. Particularly people in rural areas have difficulties getting to places where they could get free food, but it costs gasoline money to get there. It takes a vehicle to get there. There may not be bus services out there.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. And we have a lot of rural pantries in our southern regions, uh-huh. Down in Clay County and Jasper, Crawford, Cumberland, and Clark. Uh-huh. So,
a lot of rural areas, small towns.
Right.
There may not be agencies there organized enough to even provide food that could be provided.
Well, and the thing is that a lot of times we see there is an abundance of food pantries in Champaign County.
Sure.
Yet, on the other hand, a lot of them are struggling immensely. And a lot of times we kind of hope that they would combine with another program to be stronger because the ones are so, you know, having such a hard time.
Hmm. So the problem for the agencies that distribute the food is, one, they do have to pay something to get it.
That's right.
Because the food bank only survives on those contributions from the agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So smaller agencies that have trouble getting the money even to pay the low cost to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank have trouble even staying open.
That's right. That's mm-hmm. right. I've seen mm-hmm. that over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
It's very frustrating. It's like they want to be there. And then, you know, I mean, the vast majority of our agencies are volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not getting paid for it. They're out there trying to help serve a need. And I think they get frustrated. So.
So a religious organization, a church, a mosque, a synagogue that has a approved food pantry where they distribute to people who perhaps attend their congregation or that their congregation serves. They have to get approved, and then they have to go and get the food. They have to pay something for it to give it away free.
That's right. That's right. That's right. But then if they...
Because they're not allowed to charge.
Right.
Right. Money or food that you provide, they have to give away to free.
That is correct. That okay. is correct. Uh-huh. But we're so much, you know, we're so invaluable because of the, you know, the price that they do end up paying with us is minute compared to what they would have to pay in a grocery store. So sure. we're glad to be that resource.
Sure. And so, yes, you're happy to have people contribute to the Eastern Illinois Food Bank, and we've talked about how people can do that by calling 328-3663 or going online, eifoodbank.org. But you're also encouraging people to give financial resources to these agencies that have to buy the food from you and then give it away.
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely.
Well, that's very helpful. Let me take a moment to thank our callers. We've been talking with Jessica Culp, who's the Director of Development at the Eastern Illinois Food Bank. And she's a former Rice Fundraising Fellow at the University of Illinois Foundation, a graduate of Parkland College and University of Illinois at Springfield, who has been with the food bank for the last 6 months. I want to thank Jessica for sharing her personal stories and why she's interested in this and committed to it, as well as telling us about how the food bank operates and meets such an important need. Coming up on Keeping the Faith next week, we'll be talking, actually I won't be talking, but our guest host Don Nolan will be talking with Larry Greenfield from the Protestants for the Common Good about abortion rights. That's February 6 here on Keeping the Faith. Excuse me. On February 13, we have an unusual program. We'll be replaying a broadcast from September of 2000 with Reverend Bruce Heck, who died last week. And we'll be hearing Bruce describe what it was like to be a Lutheran pastor and also an actor in many local theater productions. Bruce was a graduate of Harvard and Harvard Divinity School and quite a fascinating man. And we're doing this rebroadcast in his memory. February 20, our guest on Keeping the Faith will be Marla Shoemaker, a social worker, talking about her work with the elderly. On February 27, Barbara Rossings, a professor at the Lutheran School of Theology in Chicago, professor of New Testament, will be talking about the theme of the apocalypse as it has shown up in visual art down through history. She's also giving a lecture at Krannert Art Museum Sunday afternoon, February 27 at 2 p.m., a free lecture. So that art show on the themes of the apocalypse can be seen at Krannert Art Museum. It's going on now up until the 27th. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
When you hear the word globalization, you probably don't think of the sport of soccer, but Franklin Ford does. He's traveled around the globe to explore the connection, attending soccer matches and interviewing his heroes. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, under the best of our knowledge, Franklin Ford will tell us how soccer explains the world. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 Central Time here on WILL Urbana. Fidel Castro has confounded American presidents from Eisenhower to Bush. Monday night at 8 on Monday night at 8 Central Time on WILL TV, American Experience tells the story of this controversial, charismatic dictator. Don't miss Fidel Castro Monday night at 8 on our companion station WILL TV, PBS for Central Illinois. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with the low in the lower 20s and northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy with a chance of light snow, the high in the mid-30s with northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with the low in the lower 20s and northeast winds around 5 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.